You said gold was in a consolidation phase.
Oh,
how many
it was
years?
multi-years. You know, multi-year. Yeah, something
Almost.
close to that.
So
And
what could where could we go?
yeah, you know, the breakout above that 2063 threshold was a big deal for us, and it allowed us to arrive at an objective intermediate term of about 2280. That's not too far off. But longer term of about 2,500 for the price of gold. We think it'll be sort of a slow moving ship that direction. But the momentum is there. And even right now, as of yesterday, we have what looks like we call it a flag breakout on the charts. So it's when you have a sharp up move, consolidation, and then a short term breakout. So,
In a similar vein, I guess, if you believe it, if you believe that it's digital property, Bitcoin is also NA. For an upside objective, is it not?
This is true, yeah. New all-time highs, that's what happens. And I mean, I believe in the uptrend at least. It has very good momentum. The pullback that we saw, it looks like nothing on the chart. It's pretty remarkable because it was 17, 18% of downside, but it looks like a
blip.
That
is nothing for me.
It really is. And now, of course, within like, you know, days, we've had a resumption higher. So I feel pretty good about the trend there as well. The breakout creates a long-term catalyst for Bitcoin, too. It's always going to be higher beta, you know, the spread to the 50-day moving average. I looked at it this morning. It was something like 13, 14% versus the S&P, which is about 4%. So those are initial support readings. But that's just the risk that you take by
commodities and
Happy Bitcoin Tuesday, freaks. It's your host, Odell, here for another Citadel Dispatch, the interactive live show focused on actionable Bitcoin and freedom tech discussion. That clip in the beginning has absolutely nothing to do with the chat we're going to have today. I just thought it was kind of funny having a suit on CNBC doing Bitcoin TA. Every suit is now a Bitcoin influencer. I have a great chat lined up. For us, we have Pierre here, who's the.
Hi.
How's it going, Pierre? He is the CEO of Async, which is the company behind the Async Lightning implementation. He's behind Phoenix Wallet and recently Phoenix Server. This is awesome. I just want to start off the conversation by saying, Pierre, thank you for what you and your team have been building. I mean, Phoenix Wallet is absolutely amazing. It's incredibly easy to use. It's the main wallet I onboard people with now. If they're just getting started with Bitcoin and they want to make payments very easily. So thank you.
Thanks for having me. Yeah. Well, we see Phoenix as a demonstrator of what Lightning can offer. So I like to think that what you see in Phoenix, you will be able to see that in many other implementations in the future, maybe done better, maybe a little bit different. So it's like when we started Phoenix, it was the wallet of the future. We meant it as we're going to try out the latest of what you can do with Lightning. And so it's a very cool project to work on. I'm glad you like it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of places we can go here.
Yeah.
I think first off, like I think it's really cool. So there's three main Lightning implementations, right? There's LND. There's four, I guess. There's LND. There's Core Lightning. There's LDK, and then there's Async. And Async, you guys. Are a little bit unique in the Lightning implementation space because you're actually building out this Lightning implementation purpose-built for powering Phoenix Wallet. So how do you think about that, you know, when you think about what you're building compared to what many of the other Lightning developers are building out in the space?
Yeah, we have two, actually. We have two separate Lightning implementations. Little known fact. The first one is Eclair, which is the one we started working on in 2015. And the goal of Eclair was to power a large scale routing node. Because since the beginning, we were convinced that we didn't really believe in everybody running a small routing node at home for obvious reasons related to liquidity and security management and a lot of stuff. So we don't think it made sense economically to run a small routing node. So since the very first commit on Eclair, it was designed to handle a lot of channels, to be maybe not very, maybe not with a lot of features, maybe not with the all the bells and whistles, no fancy interface and all that, but very reliable, very scalable, and that's the if you wanted to characterize our implementation compared to C Lightning LND, that would be it. And so we did this between 2015 and 2018, I think. And at that point, we realized that it was quite easy to make this software run on Android. That's when Eclair Mobile started. And Eclair Mobile is the ancestor of Phoenix. But then we wanted to have this wallet run on iOS too. And at this point, we created a new implementation from scratch. So it's inspired from Eclair, but it's a separate implementation. It's written in Kotlin, and this one is focused on very lightweight, lightweight implementation, resource efficient. It does not scale to 100,000 channels, but it's very portable. You can run it on Android, you can run it on iOS. And it turns out you can also run it on a server, which is what we did with PhoenixD. So we really have two implementations, each with their characteristics. And if you take a look at what we worked on since we started, we have basically never changed direction and have always followed a linear path. And so everything, like every pieces that we put together, was towards this goal, which is why sometimes, like from the outside, you could wonder, why do they, you know, spend time and energy building Eclair? Why don't they use another implementations? Well, the reason is that we had to, it was purpose built for what we had in mind, and we didn't want to depend on other teams to build it. I'm just trying to, you know, I'm going a little bit besides the original point, but to explain why we do what we do and why we do it that way. Is that when you work on a technology like Lightning, which is evolving very fast, and you won't want to depend on upstream implementers, because if you're stuck behind someone developing some feature that you need, then you're going to have a hard time. You're going to have to wait. It's going to be frustrating. Maybe they're going to have different priorities and all that. Our approach and the specificity of our approach is that we control the whole stack.
Right.
Even before the implementation, like down to the protocol design. And this allows us to move very fast. But it means that we have to work on all the different pieces that we need.
Right. I mean, I think that's key. That's key to a lot of your success and key to one of the reasons that the UX is so much better than so many other self-custody Lightning wallets in the space. And a perfect example of that is if you're an end user, right? If you're an end user and maybe you're new to Bitcoin, you're new to Bitcoin and you launch Phoenix Wallet for the first time and you buy some Bitcoin or you receive Bitcoin from a friend and you receive that payment as an on-chain payment. Phoenix is immediately creating a Lightning channel for you. And then if you receive more money on chain going forward, that on-chain payment is automatically then spliced into your existing Lightning channel. And I believe in practice, it's the only mobile self-custody wallet that supports splicing right now. And it's because you guys control the entire stack.
Yeah. Well, it's also because, you know, there are different kind of features, but features like splicing, they only operate at the peer level, which means that if we control both the mobile and the routing node, that we can do stuff. Some other features, for example, privacy features, network-wide features, we need to wait for the protocol to be mature enough. And that's why it takes more time. It's not that it's less prioritized. It's just that it's much more difficult to deploy because we depend on others. And that's more difficult. It takes more time.
So am I correct that when you're using Phoenix Wallet, right? There's one implementation is running on the phone, and then the routing node is running Eclair.
Yeah.
So it's actually two different implementations.
Yes, they share some similarities because the same people worked on them.
Right.
But they are different. So basically, that means that when we ship something like splicing, we actually implemented it twice. One more complete part on Eclair, and the more specific limited part on the library that underpins Phoenix, which is called Lightning KNP. So that's how it works. Yeah.
Okay. So let's. For the sake of this conversation, let's start with the wallet, and then we can talk about we can go deeper on the implementations and how you're thinking about protocol development, and we can talk about Phoenix Server. I think Phoenix Server is absolutely massive, and it's relatively newly announced. It was announced last week.
People seem to like it. We will. I'm really looking forward to see what is going to be built on top of it.
But let's start with the wallet. Sure. One of the things I like about you guys is your website is very clear on like the trade-offs you make with the wallet. You don't try and like hide things from the users. You make specific trade-offs and you do it intentionally. So when you're thinking about the actual Phoenix wallet. Phoenix Wallet by default, all your funds are in essentially a single Lightning channel.
Yeah.
Do you think so? If a user wants to make a on-chain payment, they're actually doing a swap to pull it out of the Lightning channel, correct?
Yes, but you know, since the splicing update, it has been a major change in how we see on-chain and off-chain. Because before splicing, like you would be either on-chain or on Lightning, and it was kind of fixed and really separate. But with splicing, the difference between these two layers, it's really, really thin, which means that you can actually spend a channel is just a UTXO, right? It's a UTXO, an unspent transaction output. And it can be spent by a transaction that gives some funds to the LSP, us, and some funds to you. And this transaction is left unpublished. That's what a channel is. It's just a UTXO.
Right.
But you can spend this UTXO directly when you in Phoenix. It's just gonna create a new channel at the same time. So you're not really like, yes, logically you're swapping funds, but you're actually spending the same bitcoins that are in your channel.
Right.
It's the same. And
it's still just one Bitcoin payment now that splicing exists. Used to be two Bitcoin payments, basically, right?
No, in the previous version of Phoenix, it was simply trusted. You would send us, you would pay us over Lightning, and we would make the swap. It was trusted. It was very basic, extremely basic. It was like quite primitive, really. And so in this with splicing, you just span your outputs and create a new channel at the same time. And but the thing is, I don't know if you remember, but a few years back, there were a lot of ideas putting forward, and people were imagining what Lightning could become. A lot of them were unrealistic, turns out, but some of them, one of them was every on-chain transaction will be a Lightning channel. And at that time, most of this idea that we were floating around, I was like, no, it's not going to happen. It's totally unrealistic. This one, I was also thinking, that sounds a little bit unreasonable, but it turns out it's exactly what splicing is. When you, with splicing, you create a new channel with every transaction that you make. And there is basically no overhead when you do an on-chain payment versus a Lightning payment. So you could even describe Phoenix as an on-chain wallet with a single UTXO, so all your funds are always consolidated. That's a trade-off that we could address.
Right.
But basically, you could see it as an on-chain wallet with the option to spend your funds over Lightning. It would be a fair characterization.
Yeah, no, I mean, once you added splicing, it really changed the game. I mean, in terms of fee burden too, it really changed the game.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about the trade-offs a little bit. The first thing I want to talk about is how you think about on-chain fees. We recently had on-chain fees spike with the different inscription pressure and the, you know, mempools filled up and we had on-chain fees go up high. And as a result, your users specifically, I assume your support requests went up tremendously. And there's like new settings now in the wallet in terms of a maximum fee and stuff like that. How do you think about that? I mean, this is obviously as someone who onboards a lot of people to Bitcoin, it's a hard thing for me to translate to a new user that, you know, when they receive their first payment, the Lightning channel needs to be open. They're going to pay an on-chain fee. And then going forward, if they're paying via Lightning, they're going to have a much lower fee. If they pay via on-chain, they're going to have a much higher fee. If they don't have inbound liquidity is another piece there. Then they're going to have to do another on-chain transaction to increase. True. How do you think about this? I mean, it's not an easy problem.
No, it's definitely not easy. So the first thing is, during the past 6-9 months, the fees have been very volatile. And so it creates issues, but it's also an environment for which is pretty positive for our service. You know, there are two situations where, as a Lightning wallet, you're going to have trouble explaining your value to users as an LSP. Is if the fees are always very low, which is why during the past years, Moon Wallet was a very attractive choice.
Right.
Because why not? When it's very cheap, it seems simpler. The other situation is when fees are always very high. And then it's a problem for the LSP because everything is more expensive all the time. The intermediate situation where we have been in the past months is actually the one which is the most favorable for our business because when fees are volatile, the service that we offer to the users is just to absorb this volatility by offering liquidity. So it's not a bad thing for us. It's hard to explain and to guide users for them to navigate this environment, but it's actually the situation that is the most positive for an LSP. I don't know if that makes sense, but So it allows us basically to tell users, okay, you're going to have one mining fee. If you manage your liquidity right, you're going to save a lot of on-chain transactions. And then on our side, if the mining fees are volatile, that it means that sometime in the future, maybe in a few months, the fees are going to be low, and then we can claim back unused liquidity. So it's essential that fees don't stay consistently low or consistently high. My gut feeling is that this is going to be like that in the future, a little bit like the price. It's always volatile.
But you don't think we're going to be consistently high in the future, right?
I don't think so.
I mean, I still think it'll be volatile.
Yeah. It's going to be volatile.
It's a free market. It's a truly free market. So free markets are volatile.
Yeah, exactly.
But higher than the current volatile free market,
yes,
in my opinion. Like right now we're looking, we have mempool.space up during the live streams. And like next block fee is 19 sats per byte. Like we could be in a situation where instead of it ranging from 100 sats per byte to 5 sats per byte, it's ranging from 400 sats per byte to 100 sats per byte, something like that, you know?
Yeah, it could be. But the thing is, as long as every now and then the fees go down, then it's good for us. And if every now and then it goes high, then it gives a very good reasons for users to use a wallet like Phoenix or any other Lightning wallet. And you know what's funny is that, so on one hand, at the end of the previous year, we were busy migrating our users from the previous version of Phoenix. So
right.
Yeah, we had to pay for those fees. So on one hand, it was not very nice, but on the other hand, it showcased the advantage of being Lightning to a lot of users. And one funny thing too is, you know, so it's a small team at Async. We're just 10 people.
Amazing. It's amazing what you guys have built with such a small team.
And we're doing everything, including the support, which means that first, we are very well aware of the issues that our users have because we do it directly. And most of the customer support that we had to do at the end of the previous year was not related to Lightning. It's actually related to people having trouble with block time and confirmation time.
Right.
So that's interesting. So whenever you somebody says, you know, Lightning is too difficult, it's too complicated, that's not what we experience. I think it's because since failures on Lightning tend to be immediate, like maybe you're not going to find a route to make a payment, but that's the kind of error that the users can understand, and they can deal with that. But having a transaction linger for weeks, they don't like it at all, and they don't understand why it could happen.
It's confusing.
Yeah, it's confusing, and those volatile mining fees times are quite interesting to live.
So, I mean, I think it's really. I mean, like, so I personally run 5 Lightning, you know, full nodes. And then I also, I have a, you know, like my, I do use Phoenix Wallet. Like Phoenix Wallet is awesome. You know, I might have been in the beginning, I might have been in the camp where like I thought a lot more people were going to be managing liquidity themselves, running routing nodes, doing all these things. But I think it's kind of interesting with Phoenix Wallet is there's like an argument for a like more like even a more technical user to just send like a large amount, like a large UTXO in, and then just like use that as their spending wallet and not have to deal with any channel management or anything.
Yeah.
And in that situation, like the on-chain fee burden doesn't really matter to them, you know, like let's say they're sending in, you know, $3,000 or $4,000, like what the on-chain fee burden is fucking negligible in that situation.
I think most users, most Phoenix users do not realize that the splicing feature and the fact that their funds are consolidated into a single UTXO, which is, again, privacy trade-off that we can discuss. They're going to be very happy with that once
right.
the average mining fee is going to be higher. Like, and that's a major difference. That's why splicing really was a fundamental change, is that before that, some users had literally hundreds of channels, and they were not even aware of it because a lot of users don't understand how it works at all. And this was a real issue for them going forward. So now it's future proof in a sense. So that's why it was really very important.
But where I was going with that is, I want to go a little bit into like how you guys are. So like, I think it was a little bit, you probably were getting a ton of support requests on large fee amounts. And then you added this, like the fees section in settings, like the channel management, where it's like a max fee amount. Like, is that, do you think that is like a temporary stopgap solution? Because it's a little bit hard. It's a little bit confusing. Like, they receive their first Lightning payment.
The thing
and
is,
like, what if I'm sending them, if I send them a large Lightning fee payment, a Lightning payment, and they have to open their first, you know, they have to open the channel, and fees are high on chain. It's like an absolute amount. Like, how do you think about that? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, we wish we could do it better. Before we introduced this, we had a fixed 1% fee on receive,
right?
Plus 3,000 sats, and this had the advantage of simplicity. But
you were getting killed on-chain fees.
Yeah, it's just a risk. I mean, we were doing great when fees were low, but it's just a risk. And the main change that we made was to just push the mining fee to the users. To us, it's just a matter of managing risk. And once you do that, you cannot just
auto charge them.
Yeah, it's very difficult to put in one sentence what the cost is going to be. And so obviously we are, you know, trying to the way it is done currently is not final. We are thinking about it every day. But the goal was to offer more advanced users a way to fine-tune their fees to the very minimal, which is why, you know, you're going to have Phoenix users who say, it's too expensive, I'm getting killed by fees, it's nonsense. And you're going to have others who are going to say, it's awesome, it almost cost me nothing. So our because they're using it the correct way, and our goal is to find a way in the UX to make the users understand how it works. But there is a level of understanding that you need to have, which, by the way, you must have the same kind of level of understanding at the on-chain level too. If you don't know what's a new crypto, you're going to have issues with mining fees. You can get killed a bit in the same way. So it's a very difficult problem. But
especially since, I mean, so many people have been like conditioned on custodial wallets, especially newcomers. Like I like when I try and transfer someone over from like Wallet to Satoshi or something, they're like, I'm getting charged so much more fees. And it's like, yeah, well, you know, you actually have a Lightning channel. Like, you're actually holding self-custody of your funds.
Well, you know what? If you look into the fees, it's not like, try to make an on-chain transaction from Wallet of Satoshis and compare to the costs.
I know. I'm aware. The education, it's like, it's just hard to translate that to the user, especially if they're a new user.
Yeah,
exactly. It's a difficult problem.
But no, on the on-chain fees, when you make on-chain transactions, it's actually interesting how Phoenix is more efficient. It's not less expensive in Phoenix because we made a particular effort on fees. No, it's just because if you pay for UTXO, then it's easy for you to spend it. Whereas if you have a custodial wallet, they're going to have to manage a hot wallet, and it's really, really difficult to manage a hot wallet and let users spend from your wallet. It's very, very difficult. So that's why it's expensive.
Yeah, I mean, the reason I bring it up is because, I was just and when you first implemented the feature, it was like the default was a certain amount. It was like an absolute fixed amount.
I think by default it's 5,000 satoshis,
Which, like, what is that SAP per byte rate where that gets hit? Do you know?
It's an absolute in Satoshis because. Yeah.
But shouldn't it be percentage?
You have both, actually. The fact is the real cost is absolute. It's an on-chain fee, right. So the real cost is absolute. So it doesn't make sense to put it to have the main setting be relative. But you could put a very high amount, and there is also a relative in the advanced setting somewhere. There is also a relative check.
Yeah, I see advanced percentages.
Our approach to it is there are so many, you know, side effects and so many stuff going on that you don't want to be too far from the reality. And the reality is the cost is independent of the amount. So if we don't want to have too many headaches, that's the easiest way.
Fair enough. I just know when I was onboarding in the higher fee environment, I was just literally, before I would have them send into the wallet, I would go into settings and just jack up that. They were like, what are you doing? I was like, you got to go into settings. You got to increase this amount. And there was, but there's no easy answer. I don't pretend there's an easy
answer. We have introduced a feature related to that in the Phoenix D release. Maybe we'll talk about it later, but it's related to that. It's the fee credit. It's a way to aggregate amounts before you open the channel. You cannot onboard a user by sending him 1,000 sats if it costs 1,000 sats in mining fee. So The idea is to say, okay, but what you're actually going to do is you're going to pay forward and you're going to pay in advance the LSP to just put your amount aside and take it from your future mining fee. And it's a bit like custodial without being custodial. You trust us because you're paying in advance, but those are not your funds. So it's kind of a gray area from a regulation point of view, but I think it works that way.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, so let's talk about continuing the trade-offs. The major trade-off with Phoenix right now is privacy trade-off, and you're very clear on your website. But do you want to just discuss like what kind of information can Phoenix see if I'm a Phoenix user?
So we can see if you don't use Tor, we can see your IP address because you're connecting directly to our node.
Right.
We can correlate, since we are the only node that you're connected to, we can correlate your transactions. Obviously, I mean, we see how much Bitcoin you have in your wallet because they are on the other side of the channel.
Right.
But that would be, this is not a specific trade-off of Phoenix. It's a specific trade-off when you're connected to a single node.
Are you keeping track of like, so like if I open Phoenix and I pay a Lightning address, right? You can pay two Lightning addresses. And I pay like Odell at Voltage. Are you keeping track of those, which Lightning addresses you're paying? Are you keeping track of the memos of those addresses, memos of those transactions?
We don't have access to that because the resolution is done on the mobile, but we keep track of the payments.
Like the endpoint, where it goes, which node it ends at.
So, what we need to do as a routing node is we need to allocate our funds. We need to know where to allocate them.
Right.
So it's very. So we have to see where we should put our funds so that it's more reliable. One important thing in Phoenix is that it implements trampoline routing. The default routing in Lightning is called onion routing, and it's just the source. When you make a payment from A to D, the source computes the route from A to B to C to D, and then makes an onion, and intermediate routing node, in my example, it would be B and C, they don't know where the payment is going. They just forward it from the previous node to the next node. The idea of the trampoline routing was to do just that, just the same. It's an onion routing too. But like, if you want to pay from A to Z, the source of the payment, they would not have to find the whole route because this requires them to know the whole network table, which changes constantly and it's a pain to sync and all that.
It slows down the UX of the transaction.
Exactly. So the goal, they only need to select a few intermediate nodes. Like they would say, okay, I want to, I'm going to use a route, I don't know, F, N, and P. And then this intermediate node, this trampoline node, that's up to them to find the route between themselves. So it's the same. It's very similar, but at a higher level. And so we came up with this idea of trampoline routing a few years back, and we thought it was a really good way to offer privacy for mobile Lightning wallets without having them sync and be aware of the whole network table all the time. That's where I'm just saying that to explain where the current state comes from. But as I mentioned earlier, some protocol features involve the whole network, and that's the case for trampoline. A lot of the nodes in the network need to be trampoline, need to understand this protocol for this to work. And when we started, we were pushing this feature, and only us were supporting this. So what Phoenix does currently is a trampoline routing, but with only one trampoline node. So the destination is always known to us because we know they're not going to do any more hops.
And was that the LSP?
Yeah. So that's why currently we know the final destination of all payments. The idea was this to be a first step towards.
But if other routing nodes add trampoline routing, then you won't know the final destination.
No, they don't, because between trampoline nodes, or between the last trampoline node and the destination, which is the case in Phoenix, because the first trampoline node is the last trampoline node, it's normal Lightning payments. So, right. This is going to be majorly improved very soon with the introduction of blinded path. That's a more technical feature. I don't know if you want to address this right now or later, but
we're on the topic. Let's talk about blinded
path. All right. So blinded path is a way for the recipient to give the end of the route or a few sets of routes, the last part of the routes to pay them, which means
it's in the invoice.
Yeah, it's in the invoice. So from Phoenix, if you would pay, I don't know, you want to send your money to any place, you would not send the destination Bob to our node. You would send an entry node, which is a few nodes before Bob, and our job would just be to route the payment to this entry node, and then the last remaining hops are already computed. It resembles what we wanted to achieve with the original trampoline payments.
So is LND implementing this?
You would have to ask Bastien for the exact. But I think yes. So this is related to Bolt 12.
So LND isn't implementing.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know exactly how far they are. But yes, they are more informative.
Okay, well, I definitely want to talk about Bolt 12, but let's continue on the wallet just real quick here, because I just want to go through the trade-offs on the wallet.
Sure.
Right now, that main trade-off, that you know the end destination, the real reason, the key reason for the end user for that privacy trade-off is that Phoenix payments are almost instant. And if you use like a Zeus wallet where they're computing the whole path locally, is when you kind of sit there and you make the joke, you're like, oh, look, the future of finance and you're like sitting there for like 15, 20 seconds while your payment goes through.
Yeah.
And so Phoenix makes that trade off so that the payments are just like, it's literally just like a snap of finger. It's crazy how quick it goes.
It's also more reliable because you could like try some routes, but it changes all the time. The availability of routes, the amount of funds available in each channel and so on, it changes all the time. So our point of view on this is, okay, yeah, we know the destination, but first, comparing to making a simple on-chain payment, is still, in my opinion, it's still much better.
Right.
And also, it's so easy.
I mean, if it's an on-chain payment, you would know the... I mean,
yeah, I mean, everybody would have that information, basically.
Everyone has a destination. Yeah.
And also, there are no KYC, no subscription. So you can open a new wallet as you want. So what does it really mean for us to know the destination where you can change your identity whenever you want? It's not as valuable as having the user stuck in one user ID or user account, and then you can correlate everything that's related to it. And also what it allows us, and it's very important for UX, is a predictable fee for sending. Because one of the critics that we had in our previous iteration of the wallet was, I don't know how much it's going to cost me when I send payments. And
it's great. It shows the fee ahead of time.
Exactly, and that's important.
Okay, so the next thing I've gotten. You know, I just love Bitcoin, and I want Bitcoin to be as useful to people as possible and wide variety of users. And I live in the heavy technical world of Bitcoin a lot, but I also live in the newcomer world a lot. I have a lot of exposure with people that are relatively new to Bitcoin. And one thing I've gotten a little bit of heat for lately is I really like the fact that you can back up your iOS Phoenix wallet to iCloud, which is just, I mean, if you asked me 5 years ago, 4 years ago, I would have been like, fucking hell no. But it's a very easy way for a new user to back up their wallet without dealing with seed phrases, without dealing with actually storing the seed phrases securely, with making sure that they're still there. If they lose their iPhone, they can just easily log back in and have their wallet. Now, one of the cool things you guys do is when you go to initiate iCloud backup, you give like really clear, scary warnings as you enable it. What are the real risks there in terms of a user that is like using the iCloud backup feature?
Well, on the top of my head, but I would need to double check with our iOS guys. The main trade-off is that if your iCloud account is compromised, then it's not good for you. Whereas if, like on Android, there is no Google Drive backup,
right?
Then you're safe from that. So
like if you're storing like nude pictures of yourself in iCloud, like you're probably cool with storing your wallet in iCloud, right? Like, I mean, like it's when I read the things, it's like Apple might compromise you.
Yes.
But it's technically encrypted, the backup.
Yes. But if you have access to if somebody has access to your iCloud, if you have a very weak password, if you have a very weak iCloud password. And people are usually terrible at passwords, so that's the trade-off.
The warnings are like very, I mean, they should be. I applaud you for putting scary warnings there, but I think it's very compelling for a lot of people. I mean, I think
the reason we did it on iCloud and on Apple and not on Android is that on Android we by default you don't have access to Google Drive. So this would require to ask for permission, and that's some people don't like Google Drive. This feature is only available on Apple for now.
Yeah, what I mean, what I see with most people is, like, most people are more likely to lose their money than have someone steal their money, and most people are unlikely to be like a high value target that like Apple would presumably like try and attack. And Apple takes pretty decent lengths to protect iCloud from, you know, general attackers because of the fappening that happened when all the celebrities' nude photos all got out, which is not good for Apple's business. Like, they don't want nude photos getting out. So the protection they provide for the nude photos, they're kind of providing for the Phoenix backup. And for me, like, that flow, that process of getting someone new to Bitcoin, and I don't want them to use a custodial wallet, I onboard them on the Phoenix wallet, I have them enable iCloud backups, and make sure they read the warnings, and I explain to them, like, you know, make sure your iCloud password is secure password. They also have some, like, ridiculous two-factor that is, like, very opaque and hard to understand, but apparently works reasonably well. It just seems like a good trade-off balance. Like, I've known so many people who've lost seed phrases, particularly for their first wallet, and I think it's a good UX flow. Awesome. Okay, I think we got through the wallet trade-offs.
Yeah, there is one trade-off that you have not mentioned, but it's a recurring question for us: is why don't we allow users to connect to different nodes?
And
it's funny because most people think that it's because we want to capture all the payment fees, which is not the reason. It's not the reason at all. The reason is that there are two reasons. The problem are incentives. That's the main reason. You don't want to develop software and put software out for users to use, and then have users connecting to random Lightning nodes. So if they're using your software, you're not part of it. You're just providing the software, and then you have to, and then they're gonna do whatever they want and connect to nodes as unreliable as possible. When they're going to encounter issues, who are they going to turn to? It's going to be to you, because you're the most serious actor in this.
Right. Why are my payments failing?
Exactly. So we don't want to be stuck doing support for users that are using nodes that we have no power over, no control over, because it's just a nightmare. You don't want to do that. It's just going to be wasting a lot of time and a lot of effort. So that's the main reason. If users were competent and like we could do as many warnings as we could, it just doesn't work. We actually did this before with Eclair Mobile. You could connect.
Right, I remember.
So we know what that is, and we don't want to do that. It's not about the fees at all. I lost what I was about.
It's about the user experience. You want to be able to provide a good, reliable user experience.
Yeah, I mean, we don't want to be stuck because this is complex tech. And you don't want to be stuck in the middle. It's just a problem with incentives.
Yeah, I mean, go on.
The other very important reason is that one of the main services that we provide is liquidity, and specifically on-the-fly channels. And I discussed it with the Blockstream guys when they were working on Green Knight. Is how do you know? How can you tell if the user is lacking liquidity if you don't have the total view of their channels? You know, maybe you cannot receive the payment using the channel that you have with Async, but maybe your Phoenix has another channel that you're not aware about. So why would we charge the user something if it can go to another direction? So to me, we cannot offer both connecting to many nodes and on-the-fly liquidity. I don't see how that can possibly work. It's going to be very hard to explain. So those are the actual reasons.
Yep, that makes sense to me. I guess before we leave the wallet, I have two questions relating to Nostr. How attentive are you to the Nostr ecosystem? Are you familiar with Nostr Wallet Connect?
No. I know that some people want us to do something with that, but I don't know exactly what that is.
So Nostr Wallet Connect is like in Nostr, right? We have the ability to send zaps, right? And, Lightning payments to users within a Nostr app, right? And Nostr Wallet Connect basically uses Nostr as a communication protocol back to your LSP that says, like, I want to make these payments. So, like, right now, if I'm using Phoenix to send a zap, I have to leave the Nostr app. I have to go back into Phoenix. It, like, automatically opens in Phoenix, and then I have to approve the payment in Phoenix. But if you use Nostr Wallet Connect, those payments all get queued, and next time I open Phoenix, Phoenix can have, like, a threshold where it automatically makes the payment, or it can ask me, do I want to make the payment at that moment? So it basically just uses Nostr as a communication protocol, which that is what Nostr is, a secure communication protocol, to allow you to queue payments for all sorts of things. And now people are using it for subscriptions. So like Geyser Fund, you can set up like almost like a Patreon level subscription where I want to send 5,000 sats every month. And basically Geyser is sending this Nostr event to Phoenix. And then when I open Phoenix, it's like, you have these subscriptions, and I can, like, Mutiny Wallet has kind of been ahead of the game on that. Set a threshold, you can set a threshold, like, every day I want to auto approve, a certain amount, for this one app. So that when I open up Phoenix, it just automatically makes those payments, essentially.
Okay. And so it's essentially just Phoenix embeds a Nostr client, right? And reads.
Into the LSP. Yeah.
Okay.
Look into it. Cool. And then the other thing is using like Nostr contact lists for like, so you can have like a, I don't know if, I mean, you're in France. I don't know if you know like Venmo, or I assume like Revolut and like the European based ones have it. But like basically, yeah. I can just like open it up and be like, I want to pay Marty, and Marty's already my Nostr contact, so he has a Lightning address set up, So it linked to his Nostr account, so I can just like easily import my Nostr contacts to pay people. Those are two different things.
On the more general payment front, our immediate focus is Bolt 12, which is a major milestone.
Perfect. Let's talk about Bolt 12.
Yeah. So I mean. These features that you're mentioning to me is like the cherry on the cake once we have the big infrastructure working.
Well, let's talk about Bolt 12. Yeah. Like, where are we on Bolt 12? How are you thinking about it?
So Bolt 12, we have, as for everything, we have to implement it twice. Remember, once in Eclair, once in Lightning KMP. So right. We have done it in Eclair a few months ago. And we are currently doing it in the Lightning KMP, so in the Phoenix. I think it's a matter of weeks, months, let's say a few months. And what it offers you, basically, it's a static address. it's like your right. old Bitcoin address that you can put everywhere on your wherever you want. And it doesn't change, and it allows you to receive Lightning payments. And it would make the Phoenix server demo even more nice, because basically you just start the daemon, it just prints an address, and then you can put this. And like to receive donations, donations on wherever, it's so simple. You just put your Phoenix server somewhere on your node. You don't even need to bother with firewall or whatever. It just sits somewhere and connects to the internet, and then you can paste your static address and receive funds. It's the same UX basically as a regular Bitcoin address. The thing is, and it's it uses a lot of tech because what it does essentially when you pay a static address like this. The sending wallet is going to go through the Lightning network. It sends a message. It's not a payment, it's a message to reach the destination node and ask for an invoice, and then it's going to pay the invoice. So there are two round trips, which also had the added benefits that it's kind of like a probing, like you can check whether the destination is reachable before asking the invoice. A lot of Lightning products currently do actually manual probing. This allows us to wake up the mobile in the case of Phoenix, because we know that the payment is going to happen. So there are a lot of...
Right, so does that mean I can receive if I don't have the app open?
It's already the case, you know. You can try to turn off Phoenix. I mean, to generate an invoice, to share an invoice, and then turn off Phoenix. It's going to wake up just in time. Receive the payment. But the problem is that you still have to generate an invoice for that payment.
Right. Every time I got to generate, I got to open the app, generate an invoice, send it.
So in the case of Phoenix, we are going to wake it up just in time to create the invoice. This is going to happen automatically. You won't be, no interaction necessary at that point. And then the payment is going to go through. So the goal is to have a very, very similar experience to receiving an on-chain payment.
So I've been excited about Bolt 12 for many years now. how close are we from that experience actually happening?
Oh, we are close. We don't have the habit to make announcements of announcements. But that's what we are working on currently. That's our next main release feature. The only thing is that this is network wide. So just because Phoenix supports it doesn't mean that you can do.
We need the sender to support it and the routing.
We need everyone to support it. We need everyone to support it. I don't know if you have been using Kraken withdraw to Lightning feature, but you have to input a new invoice every time you want to make to send payments over Lightning. That's really not great. So we will need then to implement that too, and all the exchange and all that. So that takes time.
Specifically the sender side needs to be able to support.
Yeah. I mean, the sender side, but also the network, because, you know, it uses Onion messages. So messages have to be routed in the network. We can skip some nodes. Not everyone has to update, but it's better if...
you still need a large amount, decent amount for reliability reasons. So Phoenix Server is this idea of taking the ease of use of Phoenix Wallet and putting it in an always-on server environment.
Yeah.
Let's chat about, because you released this last week. I mean, on the surface, it seems absolutely massive, incredibly useful to a lot of people, particularly, you know, this idea that you don't have to worry about inbound liquidity, that you guys handle that automatically for the end user. What's the quick pitch on Phoenix Server? How do you think this is going to affect kind of the Bitcoin landscape?
So basically, it's just it's exactly like Phoenix Mobile, except that you interact with it not with pushing buttons on the screen, but just sending HTTP calls. So it just brings the ease of use of Phoenix Wallet, but for developers who can build any Lightning connected services. And we have added a few features around, because a lot of these potential applications involve receiving. It's often receiving more than, like for merchants, receiving more funds than sending. It can be both, but so we added a few features to make it really completely transparent. So for developers, it allows you to interact with Lightning with absolutely no headache. It's like exactly like you would if you build a traditional merchant website. You would plug into Stripe and two HTTP calls and one callback. It's exactly the same, and in a cost effective way. So we made, like for Phoenix Wallet, we make all the trade-offs except the one that is self-custody. So we allow ourselves to do some trust, but we put the limit at self-custody.
So like a new merchant could run this and they just start immediately receiving Lightning payments. Yeah, they pay you 1% as the LSP and that's that.
Exactly. So not only is it easy from an integration point of view, but you also benefit from the well-known reliability that Phoenix offers. So when you use Phoenix server to receive payments as a merchant, your inbound liquidity is the inbound liquidity of the async Lightning node. So you're not gonna have any issues around that, and it's a great burden to remove off your shoulders if you want to receive funds on Lightning.
Wait, so right now with Phoenix Wallet, let's say I put 10 million sats into Phoenix Wallet, and I have 10 million sats of outbound liquidity. But for inbound liquidity, I have to pay an on-chain fee when I need to increase my inbound liquidity. Yeah. How is that handled on Phoenix server? Like, am I not paying that on-chain fee?
So on Phoenix server, let's do the actual steps of what's okay. going to happen. If you start with a brand new wallet.
Okay, brand new wallet. I'm a merchant. I have no Bitcoin. Yeah, exactly. I want to accept Bitcoin.
So you start the daemon.
Okay.
Then you're gonna use the API to create an invoice. Then a payment is going to arrive. At that point, if the payment is more than the mining fees required to create the channel, then a channel is going to be created, and the mining fees are going to be deducted from the amount you receive.
Okay.
And in the same operation, we are going to also add inbound liquidity with the default of 2 million sats with a 1% fee.
Okay.
Okay. So this, we are going to do one on-chain transaction. It's going to create a channel. It's going to give you a lot of inbound, and that's it. That's the easy scenario. Now, another scenario where...
So that happens, and then someone walks into my store or goes online to my store and then tries to pay me 4 million sats, right? More than my inbound liquidity. What happens in that situation?
Well, in that situation, the channel is going to be too small, so another on-chain transaction is going to be required. You're going to receive the 4 million in that operation, and you're going to have add also 2 million sats.
So the merchant's still paying that on-chain fee though, right?
Yeah, they have to pay it. But the thing is, so if your average the average invoice that your customers pay is 2 or 4 million sats, you're going to want to increase the default liquidity amount to be much larger than that. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense. You're going to have to pay on-chain fees all the time. On the other hand, if you receive that amount, the weight of the on-chain fees is quite low in relative terms. So right. It's up to you. But basically...
So in practice, it works very similar to the actual wallet does?
No, because, I mean, yes, it's similar, but it's not exactly the same because on Phoenix, you're not currently able to request inbound liquidity at the same time as creating a channel. Right. So it requires two transactions. That's a major difference. And the other major difference is that let's suppose now that so you start from nothing and you try to receive only 1,000 sats. It's not enough to cover for the on-chain transaction. On the Phoenix Mobile, we would simply reject the payment because it's too expensive. The mining fee is too expensive. You cannot cover the cost with this payment. On Phoenix server, this amount goes to your what we call a fee credit. Is going to be used to pay future mining fees. That means that typically, I guess that on Noster, the typical tip is not going to be 2 million sats. It's going to be much smaller than that.
Right.
In this situation, then all the small tips would aggregate. And as soon as you reach the amount needed to open a channel with 2 million sats inbound liquidity by default, or possibly more if you configure it differently, then you're going to end up with a big channel and receive all the future tips in this channel. And you would have...
And then you take out the fee credit at that point.
Exactly. And so all the small tips that would have been rejected on Phoenix Mobile. They are taken and they are used to pay the mining fee. So every single Satoshi that you receive, it's not lost because it's going to pay to contribute to paying this the fee for your channel. That's a major difference because it means that you don't have to worry about threshold effects. Everything appears to be linear. So you can, as a merchant, you don't have to pay attention to these details at all. You just have to think in terms of relative fee, total fee. And our goal is to bring it as close as 1% overall as possible. And it's you can see the calculations in our website, but basically it's between 1% and 2% depending on your settings and the mining fees.
Got it. Now, am I correct to assume with the focus on Bolt 12 that is there any priority now with this Phoenix server, is there any priority to add Lightning address support to that?
We want to add something that I don't know if you came across the DNS proposal from Bastien that he put together. I think it's end of 2023. Basically, we want to offer something functionally equivalent to LN address, but much more private. The problem with Lightning address, it from a functional point of view, is great, but it leaks a lot of information about the sender and the recipient. Because you're asking your server, and the sender, if you're an LSP like us, if we run a Lightning address service for our Phoenix users, then whoever wants to send a payment to a Phoenix users to a Phoenix user using their Lightning address would reveal their IP to us. The IP address to us because they would have to contact our service, and we would. And yeah, so that's a big problem. And so there are privacy issues with that, and we believe that leveraging Bolt 12 and static addresses, we can make much better technical solution, which is also exactly as easy to integrate for everybody who wants to play with that, because it's just a static information. So you just have to resolve it using DNS or using whatever you want. And it does exactly the same. So that's the reason why we haven't supported Lightning address. It's not related to not being able to wake up Phoenix, because we already do it when we do a regular Lightning payment. It's specifically because of privacy concerns.
Right now in Phoenix Wallet, I can send to a Lightning address. I can't receive to it.
You can send because if you want to send, that's your problem. Phoenix is going to contact the whoever is the server.
Running the web server.
Yeah, so you're responsible.
Request an invoice.
Exactly. But we don't want to have that information ourselves. So that's why we don't offer this feature.
And if I have Tor enabled on Phoenix Wallet and I'm paying a Lightning address, then it's going through Tor when it requests that.
I believe yes. At the very least, if you have Orbot on your phone, yes. I would have to double check, but okay, I believe yes.
Okay, that makes sense to me. Bolt 12. Hopefully, I mean, I had Steve Lee on the show a couple weeks ago, and he was quite optimistic about Bolt 12 from the LDK side. So
yeah, they are definitely moving forward with this.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, I think this has been a great chat. I mean, we're a little bit over the hour mark now. I think Phoenix D, like this Phoenix server idea, could be it seems quite compelling. It's like for the donation use case, for the merchant use case. I can see it being implemented in BTC Pay server to make it quite easy for people.
That would be the perfect use case. I mean, that definitely... Really, as a way to just try out receiving Lightning payment for not a reasonably sized business, let's say, I think it's really, really, really a very compelling offering.
Awesome. I have one last question for you, actually, and it's going back to I guess it's relevant to both Phoenix Wallet and Phoenix Server. So let's say, like, worst case scenario, it goes back to trade-offs. Worst case scenario, the Phoenix node goes offline for whatever reason. We don't have to speculate for why it happened. But everyone, you know, they have a channel open with this node. How does the end user, I have Phoenix Wallet, I have 10 million sats there. It's in a channel with the Phoenix LSP node. That node goes down. How does that look for the end user?
Okay. So firstly, before that, that everybody needs to be aware is in the security model of Phoenix, you need to have Phoenix installed on your mobile or one mobile that you own with connecting with access to the internet all the time. It's not a cold storage wallet. It has to be able to access the blockchain once right. every 2 weeks. That's very, very important because so as long as you have this, then you're safe.
Otherwise, you could broadcast an old state and take the money.
Yeah.
Or anyone who has access to the node.
Yeah, exactly. And also, this means that you have you can force close the channel whenever you want. Maybe we're offline, or maybe we are, I don't know, we have been compromised or whatever. For any reason, you want to just, it's a way for you to fire us basically as an LSP and just take your money back. So the way I see it, so let's say one day we go down or we just go offline and don't respond anymore.
Business goes out of business.
Yeah, whatever. Exactly. If I would imagine it's a more problematic situation because if we just go out of business, we would prepare it, right?
Right.
So this is just...
You're not going to be assholes about it.
Exactly. Yeah. So let's say we just disappear from the internet.
Right.
As long as you have your mobile with Phoenix installed, you're safe. You don't have to panic. You're gonna have to force close your channel at some point.
It works like just a normal force close.
Exactly. You don't have to do it right away. I imagine that some people would take over or fork our code and make a nice tool to help. I don't know exactly, but there is no rush. There is no need to. There is no like delay that you need to count before money is lost or whatever, because what Phoenix shows you and you and every user should, if you want to understand how this works, go to the channel details and you're gonna see your UTXO and it's yours. And in your channel data, you can see the commitment transaction. It's the transaction that if you publish is going to spend this UTXO and give you money back to your wallet. As long as you see this UTXO, you see this transaction, and you know you can publish it, you're fine. So,
if I go into the payment channel settings on Phoenix and I press the close all button or the force close all button, what happens next? I haven't pressed that button yet.
If you press the close button,
yeah,
it's just going to be a mutual close.
But what on chain address does that go to? Because every time I send to an on-chain address in Phoenix, it just automatically splices in. So
yeah, it's going to be
I should press that button.
An on-chain address derived from your seed following BIP 84. Okay, so you just use any normal standard on-chain wallet, you're gonna find your fans there.
Got it.
If you force close,
I can just like import it into Sparrow at that point, and it'll be in Sparrow.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. If you force close your channel, then it's not going to go directly to your on-chain address because there is a delay. The same delay, 2 weeks delay that we have on our side to protect users from fraud from our part, there is the same delay for Phoenix. It's smaller, it's just 5 days instead of 2 weeks. But for the same reason, we need to protect ourselves against our users too. So right. you're gonna have to wait for 5 days before the funds go to the wallet. And during these 5 days, Phoenix needs to be installed because it needs to be able to publish the transaction that finally sends the funds to your personal wallet. So basically, never uninstall Phoenix as long as you have not recovered all the funds and you'll be fine.
Got it. Okay, that seems pretty straightforward. Pierre, this was a great chat. I really enjoyed it. I really appreciate what you and your team have been building. I mean, There's a lot of us. There's a lot of us out here that rely on what you guys are building, and you guys have really pushed the industry forward.
Thank you.
Do you have any final thoughts before we wrap?
I think you know, there have been a lot of changes in Lightning, and in particular in Phoenix over the past year. Bolt 12 is going to be a huge milestone. There are one other update coming up. It's related to Taproot. We have done one part with the swaps, but the channel transactions are going to be Taproot 2, which means that footprint of your wallet is going to be, it's not going to stand out on the blockchain as much as it does currently. So the technology is maturing, Phoenix is maturing, and
like right now, it's pretty obvious that it's a Phoenix wallet, right?
It used to be obvious that it's Phoenix. Now it's obvious that it's a Lightning wallet, and after that, it's just going to look like a standard P2TR wallet. It's not particularly private, but it doesn't stand out. So it's a huge all the privacy features that we. Unfortunately, those are the most difficult to do. So they come at the end, but they're finally coming.
Awesome. Well, thank you again. You have my contact information now. If I can help in any way, don't hesitate to reach out.
Cool.
And it was a pleasure.
Thank you for having me. Bye.
Awesome. Thank you, Pierre. I want to do a huge shout out to the freaks who joined us in the live chat. You guys make this show unique. You guys make this show special. Thank you. And a huge shout out to all the freaks who continue to support the show. We're ad-free, sponsor-free. Your donations really do help. So thank you for sending your hard-earned sats to Dispatch and keep us going. We have the top three supporters this week was Eric99 with 100,000 sats, 8 Mithrandir with 15,000 sats, and TKCTV with 10,000 sats. That includes Podcasting 2.0 and Zaps that come into the live stream. I combine them now into one shout out. And next week, same time, same day, Tuesday, 1700 UTC, we're going to have Tony from Unity Wallet joining us. So definitely come join us for that. And I appreciate you all. Thanks, Pierre.
Bye.
That track was Life's a Beach by Django Django. Love you, freaks. Hope you enjoyed this rip, and I'll see you next week. Stay humble, stack sats.